Hello and welcome to Intrepid Times, your home for narrative travel writing with heart. I'm Nathan Thomas, and alongside my co-host Jennifer Roberts, we take you behind the scenes of some of our most popular travel stories, get you to meet travel writers, and help you discover how you can share your own travel stories with the world. Hello and welcome to the Intrepid Times podcast. I'm here excited to be speaking with Katie Silcox, who is a serial expat travel writer, editor, lived overseas by my math for about 13 years, in places as far afield as India, the United Arab Emirates, Sri Lanka, and who is currently in Athens. She's been written about in such publications as Forbes, Vice, and the Financial Times, and she is a font of insight and knowledge about how to exist as a travel writer and editor and have an amazing dynamic life in the modern world, something that I know our listeners are very interested in. So Katie, welcome to the Intrepid Times podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, and what a lovely introduction.
So you're in Greece now, I believe, in Athens, and I want to talk about your life there, how you came to get settled there. But first, let's try and trace the journey that has taken you to this moment. So what first triggered your move out of your home country of the UK all those years ago?
It's a very interesting question. And this is immediately getting into this. We're going to come into a bit of honesty about the industry, I think, because I'm from the UK. I was living and working in London. At the time, I'd worked for BSkyB on their then travel website, now defunct. And I'd also worked with Lonely Planet as their EMEA editor. Both of those jobs in quite quick succession, full-time jobs, both of them were made redundant within the space. I was with Sky for about 3 years, made redundant, and then I was with Lonely Planet for about 10 months, and then I was made redundant again. So it was quite quick succession. So at that point, I'm thinking, what do I do next? You know, it was very, very early on in my career. They were the two first jobs that I'd had in the industry that I wanted to be in. And I'm thinking, what can I do? You know, where should I take this? What should I do? So as you do in that situation, I was searching for jobs. I was looking in London and across the UK, but I was also looking kind of anywhere, really. And I happened to see the job with Condé Nast Traveler India come up. It was on the Condé Nast website, the global website. So I thought, why not? And I applied. And within a month, I think, of interviewing, I got my visa. I, you know, packed my apartment up. I gave my notice in, and I was in India all within a month. So it was very, very quick that it all happened, which is A, surprising to get the visa and everything in place that quickly for India, especially. And B, I think it was the best way it could have gone, actually, because it just didn't give me a huge amount of time to think about it. You know, it just was, this is what's happening. Let's go, go, go. And suddenly I'm there. What I do find interesting as well is that I think it's always been very much in my nature to want to get out and explore and see the world. You know, that's part of the job, obviously. But I think when I started telling my friends and family that I was moving to India, there was no shock. There was no surprise. The reaction I got from most people was very much, oh, yes, of course you are. Of course you're moving to India, you know. So that was the start of it all. And as you say, since then, I've lived in a few different countries and have never looked back.
So a lot of friends and I of mine who have quote unquote normal jobs will often go overseas, do an OE, maybe do a secondment for a company for a year overseas. But the assumption, the kind of ready belief, the inevitability is that they will move back home, whether it's to New Zealand or the UK. You seem to have not done that. How often have you gotten back to the UK over the last decade and a bit?
I do. Now I'm based in Athens, Greece now, as you said. So now it's much easier to get back. You know, it's a three and a half hour flight. So it's very easy. There were times in India where I didn't go back, you know, maybe once a year or something like that. But generally I do, you know, at least once a year. Now it's probably every 6 months. So I do come back quite a lot. You know, my family is still there. I've got a lot of friends there. But on the point of not, you know, you think maybe you'll go for a few years and then return. I think that was my intention when I left. When I moved to India, I thought, you know, maybe 2 years and then I'll come back to the UK. 2 years in India turned into three, and I actually left India after three. But then it was kind of, there was no question to me that I was moving back to the UK then. It was on to the next, which was the United Arab Emirates, as you said, and Sri Lanka and now Greece. So I think I definitely moved with the intention of just doing it for a shorter period of time. But as you say, now it's been, I don't know, 12, 13 years.
Let's linger on India for a moment because I've only visited very briefly. We get a lot of submissions about India, and I find travel writing about India is either terrible or brilliant. It's just so such a complicated, overwhelming, just out of this world place for Western eyes that brilliant writers like William Dalrymple can just nail it. Of course, he's dedicated his life to understanding that place. But I find that if it's just a novice travel writer who goes to Mumbai on a weekend and tries to write about it, you're going to hear the same cliches over and over and over again. It's an assault on the senses. It's this, it's that. And how did you, having lived as a professional travel writer in 3 years, how did you find writing about your time there?
So actually, this is another very interesting question. And this is a bigger part of the my opinion on the career path of a travel writer isn't always, you know, a straight travel writer. So I've done a lot of other things as well. And actually, when I moved to India, and this is, it was as a photo editor. So I was already working as an editor and writer in the UK for the publications I mentioned. But the job, not only was it in India, it was something I'd never done before. It was as a photo editor. Honestly, I didn't expect to get the job when I applied, but I did. and I moved there. So I did do some writing on India when I was there, but it was more the, you know, organizing the photo shoots and producing the photo shoots and being on set for the shoots and things like that. So it was still travel. It was Condé Nast Traveler, but it was a very different look, which I think is brilliant for anyone who wants to be in this industry to kind of understand how the things all, you know, everything fits together. And I think when I look back, that's something I've been very lucky in. I kind of fell into the photo side of things and I am now back being the editor and travel writer again. But I think having had that experience really just builds and, you know, there's a greater understanding of publishing as a whole and media as a whole. And so, it, yeah, it was definitely more the photo side when I was there than writing.
Let's talk about that idea that you raised, that to make it as a travel writer or in this travel world, it helps to be willing and have the skill to do other things. Because I think a lot of people out there who are typing away and maybe they have a different job and they have the idea that they're going to be sent to India as you were and write an article a week from the coffee shop and that's the career. But you have to hustle a little bit more. What's your kind of overview of how this world looks and your advice for novice travel writers willing to do other things?
I think, first of all, what you've said about being willing to do other things is very important. Yes, there's, you know, the dream of being a writer. There's the dream of writing for all the big publications, the top magazines, the newspapers, the nationals. And that's wonderful. That's fantastic. But A, it's competitive. So not everyone will end up there. If you do, that's great. But I think even the people who do write for the big publications on a more regular basis would say the same, that you need to be able to diversify still. And actually, this is a big conversation we're getting into, but a lot of that also comes down to pay and the pay of the industry. So a lot of writers, myself included, I mean, as I said, I've worked as a photo editor, I've worked as a producer, but I've also worked in communications, I've worked in, you know, marketing, I've worked in and various different fields. My passion is travel editorial writing, 100%. And I'm very lucky that I still do a lot of that on a daily basis. But I definitely do, you know, copywriting or whatever it is, I kind of diversify. And I think that's really, really important to, if you want to go into this industry, to understand that that's the probable reality of it, you know, not for everyone, but that's the probable reality. And you have to be able to be open to being more diverse with what you do, I think.
One thing I like about how you talk about this is, as I get the impression that you as a copywriter, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, you as a copywriter, a marketer, a photographer, a travel writer, I'm kind of speaking to the same person, the same professional identity. Whereas a lot of folks, and this has been true on my journey as well, they sort of wear two hats. Like today I'm wearing my content strategist hat, but this isn't really who I am. I'm really a travel writer. And at the end of the day, I'm going to take off that hat and be the other person. For you, it seems a little bit more coherent. Is that a fair guess?
I think that's very fair. I think, like I said, I definitely have bits and pieces that I prefer. And for me, that is the editorial travel writing. That is, you know, it's ever since I was a child, that's actually what I wanted to do. So it's definitely, you know, where my true passion lies. However, I love words, I love writing. And for me, if that's copywriting, that's great. If it's, you know, internal communications or external communications, which I have done some of as well, that's also great. The travel side of it is great, but I love the forming of sentences and the forming of paragraphs and bigger pieces for whatever. And I also think as a writer, it's important that we do that because you're almost, you know, exercising different muscles in your brain as well by writing. And you're enhancing at the end of the day. Everything you do is just adding to your learning and increasing your kind of capacity to do things.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And the satisfaction you get when writing, even if it's a good bit of copy for a client or something, is maybe not the same as writing that amazing travel article, but I find that you get some satisfaction out of it, and probably because you have exercised the muscles, as you say.
I completely agree. And I also think it's always good to, you know, to do, it's not just in my kind of line of work, just generally in life, and probably moving to India is a big indicator of that. It's always good to do something maybe a bit out of your comfort zone, or maybe something you haven't done before. And, you know, just as a life practice, not just work, for me, it's so important for me personally to continue doing that.
And so of the places that you've lived or spend a lot of time, what was the most challenging for you? Was it India? You've also been in the Middle East and Sri Lanka.
It was definitely India. And I think there's two parts to that. Firstly, it's the first country I ever lived in outside of the UK. So I'd never lived abroad at that point. I'd also never actually been to India when I stepped foot in the country. It was my first time visiting the country. And I didn't know anyone there. So that side of it, yes. And the other side, obviously, is it's India. And as you said earlier, I'm going to paraphrase, not your exact words, but it is chaotic. It's hectic. There's a million things happening on the street at any one time. You know, it's a cliche, the sounds, the smells, the sights, you know, but it's true. And it really, I was in Mumbai, highly densely populated city. You couldn't go. I think I tried to count once. I was in the back of a taxi driving around, and I tried to count how many seconds I could go without hearing a car horn, and it was one max, you know? So it really is, and it is that typical cliche that you're talking about when people write about India, but it really is, you know, all your senses are stimulated all the time and there's no break. So to move from, you know, my very safe UK where I'm from and into that environment as a first move was quite a big thing looking back. You know, at the time I took it in my stride, but I look back and I kind of wonder how or why did I do that? But I'm so glad I did, obviously. And then I think moving on from there, it's interesting because having lived in India, the next place I moved to was the UAE, actually to Dubai, which obviously is a lot more kind of set up for people from all over the world live there. You know, it's very set up for that. But I found interestingly, because I'd lived in India, I'd met so many different people that I wouldn't have met in the UK, Indian and any other nationality you want to mention, really. So when I moved to Dubai, I was introduced to people in Dubai. You know, I had a lot more, my kind of social circle, I suppose, was a lot larger by that point. And a lot of people said, oh, I've got this friend living in Dubai, you should meet her or you should meet him. And it just kind of helped me to, I don't know, helped me to lay the ground a bit more, I suppose, when I moved there. And that continued onwards, you know, everywhere I've lived since, it's been the same pattern. So yeah, definitely India was a big step in lots of ways, but I wouldn't change it for the world.
So India was circumstance in a way that some jobs had, doors had closed professionally, yeah. And this one opened and you took the leap. For Greece, was this also a professional thing, or was this a deliberate choice? You did your research, you liked it there, you decided that this was going to be home for a while?
A mixture of both, I would say. So obviously I'd lived in a few different places by that point. And I actually first came to Greece to volunteer on a refugee camp on the island of Lesbos for 3 months in the summer 2018. And I did the 3 months. And at that point, I was also working freelance with companies in Dubai and companies in the UK. Again, those like international connections, you know, I was living in Greece, but I was working for companies in different countries. And I just decided it was a really nice place to be. And, you know, it was, for me, it was the perfect, I was in the middle time zone wise from Dubai and from the UK, and also flight time wise at that time, you know, it was pre-pandemic. So although I was working remotely, I was traveling to both countries quite often. So I was in a, you know, perfectly placed in the middle of both of the places I needed to be in most of the time. So it just worked. And yeah, that's another actually quite interesting point is, you know, the way people are working now, and remote work is since 2020 massively more common. But I was actually doing that since 2018. So, you know, for me, it's kind of been a way of working for five, 6 years now.
No, I felt the same. It was just when this happened, it was like, welcome to the party. This is what I've been
Right,
doing
exactly.
the whole time. So Greece is, I think, a place that a lot of people fantasize about, like living as a travel writer in Greece. Like that's for me, people, the dream. What's it actually like to live specifically in Athens? I imagine Athens is intense. There's not as intense as Mumbai, but for a European city, like probably as close as you're going to get.
I think you've just nailed it exactly right. And people have asked me this before, and I essentially say, after living in Mumbai, there's not many places that, you can't handle, to be honest with you. And it is intense, but I think also I've come to learn about myself and my personality and my likes and my dislikes. And I think I thrive off of that. Things are a bit chaotic. Nothing always works. Well, sometimes things work, but sometimes things don't work as you might hope that they would in, London, for example. But I think, weirdly, I think that, I kind of thrive off that. And I guess I enjoy the challenge a bit, I suppose. Or I don't see it as much of a challenge, having, had experience in other countries. I don't know what it is. There's something, I really enjoy that atmosphere and that kind of chaos.
What do you think tourists or short-term visitors to Greece from the States or the UK, what do you think they misunderstand about the place? Or what do you think wish that they would know or ask about a little bit more?
I think, first of all, definitely, and it's happening over since I've been here, I've seen an increase in visitors to Athens specifically, or people coming to Athens for 5 days rather than an overnight stay before they, bounce off to Santorini or Mykonos or any of the other islands. And I think that's, for me, that would be my key message about, visiting Greece is make time for Athens. And it's very, very interesting. It's genuinely a really cool city. It's very creative. There's a lot happening here. I used to joke that, there's a new kind of boutique hotel opening every week, and then I saw the stats and it was, 41 in a year or something. So it almost is every week there is a new, and that same applies to restaurants, bars, et cetera, et cetera. And I think a lot of people miss a lot. And also more culturally, there's some of the smaller islands, there's a lot of Greek culture, but if you're just going to Mykonos or you're just going to Santorini, you're missing a lot of that kind of Greek culture and the friendliness and openness and warmness of people here, And I would also add to that that obviously, because I'm here, a lot of friends and family have now been and spent time in Athens instead of just going to the islands. And every single one of them unanimously has left saying that's such an amazing city. There's such a vibe, there's such an energy, every single one of them. So I think it's not misunderstood, but people don't, it's not so much on the radar as it's, in my opinion, it should be. It's very underrated. But like I say, I have definitely seen that changing, and I think people are starting to realize that about Athens.
What's it like being and this is something I have my own experience with too, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. Just the idea of being an expat of, and there's a whole discussion to be had about what's the difference between an expat and an immigrant. And I know people have strong opinions on that. I'm happy to touch on that or not. But your experience being an expat just overall among all these different countries, do you find it changes the kind of people you associate with? It gives you a different way of looking at life, a different relationship with the idea of home.
100%. And I think it, so if I think about the places I've been and I think about, without going too far into politics or anything like that, but I guess I was quite narrow-minded, to be quite honest, before I first left the UK. I was very UK looking out to the world, UK centric, everything else is outside. And naturally, when you live in another country, as you'll know, obviously that changes. And you start to see, whether it's politics, whether it's food, whatever it is, you start to see things in a different way. And even people's perspectives and people's thoughts about certain things. And you're constantly given, different perspectives to what you might hold, which I think forces you to open your eyes and to understand a bit more, So I think 100% definitely it's changed my perspective. And in terms of how I think about home. Home for me is wherever I am. And I'm not saying that's going to be Greece forever. My track record shows it probably won't be. But I think home for me is where I am. And maybe that's a personality thing as well. Or maybe it's something that you kind of get used to after moving around a lot. But yeah, I don't miss a home as such. Now Greece is home. I still feel like India is home, to be quite honest with you. The UK is also home, So it's
Have you managed to revisit India since you stopped living there?
I did a lot when I lived in Dubai, yes, because it's only a 3-hour flight from Dubai. So I would go for long weekends every 4 or 5 months. I actually haven't now been since pre-2020, which for me is a really, really long time, and I'm desperate to get back.
So in addition to your work as a travel author and all the other things we've discussed, you're also the editor of a very stylish website for very stylish people called Citizen Femme. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about this publication?
I can, absolutely. It's a nice way to put it. We are, it's interesting, we're speaking on International Women's Day, and we are we're an all-women team, and we speak to a 90% female audience as well. So that's probably our kind of, you know, USP. And I think the entire team, we are the people we're speaking to. This is one of the things, you know, obviously about being online rather than print, which is, again, a whole different conversation, but we really have access to who we're speaking to, what their likes are, what their dislikes are. And we like to think of ourselves as, you know, that kind of stylish best friend who knows travel and knows all the best places in any given city or country or whatever it is. We like to tell kind of inspirational and exciting and informative stories, but always with the female lens. And I think by that, you know, obviously every female in the world is different. But I think what I mean by that is that we'll always look at, you know, the safety aspect, for example, that which is a huge part for women travelers, especially traveling solo. And we also recently launched a section called Citizen en France, which is for mums or parents who are traveling, who don't want to give up on, you know, the nice hotel and go to the one that's got that kind of not so nice kids club in the corner, you know. So we're really trying to speak to that audience. That's us in a nutshell. Yeah.
Wonderful. We'll include a link with the podcast. You mentioned the idea of the female lens, and a lot of the places that you've lived in India, Middle East, are not, I mean, for people who haven't lived there, wouldn't really consider them to be places that are particularly friendly for a female traveler. And I remember even my own experience in India, my wife was often very uncomfortable with just the day-to-day experience there. How have you, what's your opinion on that? How have you overcome that? What's your take on this?
I would 100% agree with that. And I remember, as I said, when I moved to India, it was the first time I'd been there. So, you know, you hear stories, but I didn't really know what to expect. And I remember about 3 weeks after moving there, you know, with an intention to be there for 1 or 2 years, I remember after about 3 weeks, just feeling so incredibly exhausted. And I realized it was the, you know, the constant staring, which is a thing. I don't, maybe not now. Like I say, I haven't been for 5 years now, but at the time I moved there in 2011, staring, people taking photographs. And I remember one day I bent down to tie my shoelace up and I looked up and there was probably about 5 people, including women, men and women, just staring at me. And I just thought, this, you know, this is too much. I don't know how to handle this. And in that moment, and I can remember the street I was on, I can picture it perfectly, I thought to myself, either you handle this and you continue and you move on and you live in India and you work in India and you have the experience you want, or you pack up and you go home. These are my choices right now. This isn't going to change. And I remember in that moment just be, you know, getting some sort of like inner strength and thinking, no, I can do this. I can do this. And from then onwards, of course, it still happened, but I dealt with it. I had to, you know, it's one of those situations you deal with something or you don't. And I just had to. So definitely there is an element of that for sure.
So what would be your advice for female travelers in these parts of the world? Be aware of what you're dealing with. Understand. Be strong. It sounds weird for me to say, but you have your own experience there.
That's my experience. I think there's obviously the practical things, like be aware of what you're wearing in certain places. You know, Mumbai and Delhi and even Dubai are, you know, incredibly open. And really, you can wear whatever you want in all of these cities. People may not believe that, but you can. However, it will get you attention if you do. So if you can handle that, fine. Otherwise, be careful with that. Just be aware of where you are. I think also from a safety point of view from India, it's a very big topic. Mumbai, which is where I can speak for, you know, I travel to Delhi, but for occasional weekends. To me, at the time I was there, again, this is now 10 years ago and things may have changed. For me, it was a very safe city and I was comfortable. You know, I knew my way around it very well as well. You know, once you've lived there for a while, you understand the roads, you know which way you're meant to be going in a taxi, you know if you're going the wrong way. So you come to understand and vibe and fit in with, you know, everything that's happening around you. But for me, Mumbai, I always felt very safe. Even taking taxis at 2 o'clock in the morning, I felt safe. I wouldn't say the same for Delhi, based on not my experience. I only went there a handful of times, but even conversations I've had with other people who are even from Delhi have told me the same thing. You know, there's differences in different parts. So I think you just need to be aware and understand. And if you're planning to travel, particularly solo, speak to people who have been or people who are from there, or get the advice from the people on the ground. And that's not even necessarily me right now, because again, my experience was a long time ago. So I would say, yeah, get the experience and advice from people on the ground recently or there now, you know?
It's great advice. And final question, you're not only traveling and living in these amazing places, you're also writing about it, and you're also working commercially for various companies, various clients in different time zones. How do you stay across all that, all the time zones and deadlines and Zoom calls and everything while still managing to enjoy, I hope, your travels?
It's such a good question. And honestly, it's hard. And I think this is also one of the negatives about working from home. It's fantastic. It opens up the industry to anyone who wants to be in the industry. It opens it up to so many more people. There's so much more opportunity. You don't have to live in this certain city to work for this publication. There's so much opportunity. However, it is the work-life balance for me gets difficult. I love what I do also. So I'm happy to put all my time and all my effort into what I'm doing. I love doing it. I truly love doing it. However, there then comes a time where, you know, you do hit, or I can't say burnout, but you hit a level where you think, okay, I need to have a break. And it's hard to switch off and have that break when my laptop is right, you know, in the room next to me all the time. So I think I definitely do. And particularly in summer last year in Greece, I definitely enjoyed Greece. I, you know, traveled to so many of the islands, and really, some for work, some for pleasure. I went for a friend's wedding for one, and, you know, traveled to some of the islands for work to do interviews. Definitely enjoyed it. But again, even as you're traveling in this day and age as a travel writer, you've got your laptop, you've got your Slack, you've got your WhatsApp. It's all connected. Whereas I guess that wouldn't be the case, you know, 20 years ago or something, but now it's all connected. So it is very difficult to switch off, particularly when you're traveling, for me, because you're traveling as part of the job. You're traveling for work, less than pleasure almost, although it's pleasure at the same time. It's difficult. They merge, as you can see. It's a complicated answer for me, but they definitely merge for me. And I probably need to do better at trying to break them apart a little bit.
Glad it's not just me though. Okay.
No, I think that's a lot of people these days, right?
Thank you so much, Katie. Really enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you too. Lovely to speak to you.
Thanks for listening, everyone. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast wherever you listen. Don't forget to join us in 2 weeks for another exciting episode of the Travel Writing Podcast. See you next time.